This half hour being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street and Summer. Go to purdyinsurance.com, auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They have the ability to take care of all your insurance needs, save you money in the process. You know, insurance rates have been going up. These people find ways to save you money and make sure you're fully insured. Pros, pros, customer service means everything to them. At Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. With that, we bring in the outstanding Neil Coulong. Sir, great to have you with us.
As always, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so people were saying that when Russell Wilson left the game the other day, that George Pickens also left the game. That's the tip-off. He's the starter. Does it appear that nobody won the thing and they're just going to have a starter?
One might argue that that was their decision back when they signed Wilson and traded for Fields. I find it interesting that the genesis of Kenny Pickett being traded was the idea that Russell Wilson was the starter. I don't see how Pickett's departure, which is what led to Fields being acquired in the first place, I don't see how there was a competition that was ever formed in that, short of the fact that Wilson missed a large chunk of training camp with injury. But to say that's a competition and to announce it as if there was some type of decision, just it kind of seems more like, we'll play along with the crowd that's been begging us to make this a quarterback competition back since camp started in late July. I don't think it was their intention to do anything other than start Russell Wilson. I think that the spirit of what you're saying is that the right decision is, was there a decision to be made? Does it really matter? I'm not sure. I don't know. I saw both quarterbacks struggle in very similar fashions to the last couple quarterbacks the Steelers have had. I think there are a lot of reasons to be concerned. One being, as was just announced, that Siamalu apparently suffered some type of pectoral injury, which might be something that keeps him out for a long time. If you don't have a player like that on your offensive line, an offensive line that's already rebuilding and needing to establish itself, to come together, very new group, a lot of new components. If you lose a stalwart like that, a high-end veteran across the league and really kind of the statesman of the Steelers' offensive line now, you're really not in a good spot. When you already have a new offensive coordinator coming in, a new quarterback, it seems like the quarterback, whoever it is, it's not going to be good enough to take control over the situation and to win on his own. When I say on his own, I mean he can rise above his opponent. He makes all of his teammates better. I don't know if we're going to see that type of play out of Russell Wilson or Justin Fields or whoever the third quarterback might be at whatever point during the season. I'm not sure that they have an offensive group that's strong enough to make the quarterback better. So really, you're kind of looking at a similar situation as it's been. And I can't say that this was really a competition, or if it was, the first thing that comes to my head is the Bill Parcells adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. I don't know what either of them it can really do against NFL competition, not on a snap-to-snap basis, but a drive-to-drive basis, a game-to-game basis. I've seen Justin Fields run. I'm aware that he's good in space. He has a lot of highlight plays for a quarterback whose offense is average about 18 points a game. He's not leading to high-level production. He doesn't throw the ball particularly well, and he loses pretty much two out of three games. So I don't know if that's all that great of an option anyway. If the only lens we're going to view this in is three preseason games, I don't know if a real decision can be made anyway. So in my mind, Wilson was their guy from the start, and this shouldn't be a surprise. But, yeah, I don't think Wilson beat field. I don't think there really was a competition. And even if there was, they kind of fought to a draw. I mean, neither of them really did much. So for what we can see, at least, I mean, it ended the way that I figured that it would back this spring when they signed Wilson and a couple days later had acquired Field.
In fact, I would equate it to Mayweather-Pacquiao, which I thought was boxing's first ever no-hitter. So I think it's pretty close. The they've gone through training camp and three preseason games. Is this season now actually a more of a mystery now than it was 6 weeks ago?
Absolutely. I don't know. Put it into this context, that the waiver decisions were announced today across the league, and not surprisingly, the Steelers didn't add anybody. I don't think any of their players got added by anybody. Any players that they had cut, I don't think any of them got added by anybody either. It's kind of like they're comfortable over in this group doing what they want to do. This is how they feel they should do things, but I don't know where we sit right now. I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm not sure if there's reason for optimism or pessimism. I don't think there's enough really on the table for us to say. What we know factually is they've got a lot of new pieces. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. And I think we're also getting to the point with the Steelers that we're used to not knowing what's going to happen anymore. You know, I've talked about this a few times, but this is a team that somehow was the most overrated and underrated team in the NFL last year. You know, it's a team that cycled through three quarterbacks, maybe the worst offense the NFL has seen in the last 10, 15 years, and still managed to have a three-game losing streak against Indianapolis, New England, and Arizona, and win 10 games on the season. How does that happen? You know, it really doesn't make any sense. So to act as if we know exactly who they're going to be because we don't know anything seems kind of ridiculous to me. I don't think we know enough to say one way or another, but we have seen them probably perform better with maybe a little bit less than what they have right now. I don't know if it's all that different for what we can see on paper leading into this. Now, we probably said the same thing, Steve, last year around this time. Leading into week one, we probably thought the same thing. You know, San Francisco, that's a tough opponent, but, you know, maybe they'll go out and compete, and they got their doors blown off. You know, it wasn't even close. I wouldn't be surprised to see a start to this season that looks a lot like that. I really wouldn't. At the same time, I could see them, you know, cracking off a quintessential Mike Tomlin five-game winning streak in the middle of the year when all seems to be lost. That's kind of the way that Tomlin sets things up, and I don't think that they've added enough for this season to suggest that they're above kind of that hyperbolic, you know, ebb and flow that they get into, you know, win four, lose four. I think I said that last year, too. This is a team that's going to win three games in a row at some point, and they're going to lose three games in a row at some point. They're going to be streaky because they're not consistent. They're still kind of trying to figure out who they are. Well, it's even more unstable now. You don't have a true high target receiver that we know of. You know, I understand that the talent that George Pickens has, and there are definitely some things I like that I saw of him this preseason. But again, I don't want the highlights. I want to look at it drive to drive, game to game. Are you contributing? Are you doing the tough work? Are you doing those kinds of things that the big money receivers are being asked to do to get eight targets a game? I don't know if he's capable of doing that yet. And frankly, neither does anybody else because he hasn't done that. So let's wait and see. But that's probably the most solid point in your offense. Jaylen Warren, he's going to, if he doesn't miss time right away, he's going to miss a lot of practice leading into week one. You have a new offensive line. Like I said, Isaac Siamalu might miss time. That injury was just announced in the duration of this call. That's a problem. You know, Mason McCormick is a rookie. He's been playing on the right side primarily. Do they move him to left guard? You're going to shake up an offensive line that's already been shaken up, and now you've got it probably at least three new starters across the board, and two of them are rookies, three of them are rookies. So you're going to struggle offensively. What does Arthur Smith have to do to get all of that lined up again? That's a challenge. That's really hard to do. So acting as if we can predict it one way or another, I think, is a fool's errand at this point. I don't know who the Steelers are going to be. From a personnel perspective, I don't necessarily know they've gotten any better. Maybe they can win with the guys they have with better direction and better quarterback play. I think that argument could be made. But, again, the continuity. They had to mix a lot of things up, but maybe – you know, maybe they got to spend their first four or five games getting all of that down in real time before they can start to take off. That might dig them a bit of a hole, and they're playing catch up for the rest of the year with the bulk of their division schedule coming when the weather gets cold. You know, that might be a challenge. There's a lot up in the air. I'm not sure exactly where to put them.
But is there anybody else in the division that actually is better than last year that we can tell?
I don't think so. I mean, if you look at Cincinnati, everyone's going to point to that. Well, a healthy Joe Burrow, I'll see the healthy Joe Burrow when I see it. I know that type of injury, and it's not something that you're going to report on heavily because, you know, they're not going to make the doctors available to reporters to speak, and they're certainly not going to say there's any problem, but that's not an injury you just come back from. It's pretty significant for what it is. Right when I heard it, I was like, that could be problematic. When you take a big arm with big accuracy and phenomenal vision, everything that makes Joe Burrow one of the best in the game, but then take off 10% velocity, 10% control of his passing, I'm not saying he's just a dude at that point, but he's not the same kind of assassin that he has been. That 10% really is the difference, you know, between the top level and maybe 7 or 8 in the league, you know, whatever that theoretical rankings list would look like. That could be a problem. And from there, yeah, I mean, you have Ja'Marr Chase, who hasn't practiced at all. I would imagine he's going to have a contract here pretty quick, but we haven't seen it yet. We don't know what else they've really done offensively to improve a great deal. And I think they've been getting away with quite a bit defensively. It's going to take another phenomenal job on that side of the ball, I think, to have them competitive. Baltimore lost a lot, and people don't seem to mind that all that much because Baltimore, you know, goes into these cycles. They lose players to recoup the picks and make a killing out of all these mid-round guys that nobody else wanted. They turn into all pros. They're in the down part of that cycle right now. You know, they just lost a lot of guys. They've got to get right with the new contract for their quarterback. They'll be a competitive team because they always are. John Harbaugh's a great coach. He's got guys, you know, playing to a high level, probably above and beyond what they are. But game to game, how scary are they? I don't know if they're one of the best of the AFC or anything like that. And Cleveland, you know, you've heard me for 6-7 years now talk about how great I think Cleveland's going to be in August. Well, I'm not doing it this year. You know, they're going to have to prove it. We'll see. I'm a huge believer in Jim Schwartz as a defensive coach.
Me too.
I know that they brought a lot defensively last year. We'll see what they do offensively, though. That's usually the problem over in Cleveland. We'll see how competitive they can be.
Okay, in this league, with the changeover and so forth, and of course the way the rules are structured, people make assumptions about who the dominant teams are, but in reality, is there a dominant team in your mind?
I know this. There is not a dominant team in late August, and we will find out in week one who was ready for the season and who wasn't. Because come week two, you're really going to see who everybody is. Short of like the 2007 Patriots, who might have been the most impressive team in NFL history, for their first four or five games, they smoked everybody. Teams now in this era of the CBA, they tend to really kind of peak and valley early. They're phenomenal for one game and they fall apart for another. I believe that the 70-point Dolphins game against Denver, I think that was early on in the season. Some teams really seem ready to get going right away, and some teams don't. You get a lot of blowouts and a lot of, you know, kind of strange outcomes of games early. But the biggest difference between a team during the season that you'll see is week one to week two.
Mm-hmm.
So going into week three, I think we're going to have a much better sense of who's here to play this year, who can do this. And then, of course, there's going to be injuries that wreck all of that anyway. But Right now, no, I don't think so. I think the league is pretty balanced. I thought, you know, not to take anything away from the champs, but for everything you know about Cleveland, Patrick Mahomes, who I feel should have been the MVP last season, he got less help on offense than he's ever had in his career, and still navigated a high-level team. But a huge chunk of that was the defensive effort that Kansas City put forward, especially in the playoffs. Are they going to be able to do that again? Are they going to be able to stand on their heads and win three consecutive big games the way that Kansas City had to defensively last year? That's tough to ask anybody to do. But I think Miami is a team that, that could make that leap this year. They got a lot of good things going for them. A playoff team last year, but frankly, they were playing with plumbers and firemen on defense in that playoff game. You can't have six starters out on defense and expect to do a whole lot come playoff time. But they, like anybody, they stay healthy. I think they've got a pretty good shot at anything. And I think with that, the NFC is wide open. Everybody loves Green Bay right now. We'll see how that all progresses. I think you put Trent Williams and Brandon Ayuk back on San Francisco, I see them being able to beat anybody the way they have in the last couple of years. So, yeah, I mean, I think in that sense, it's going to be a fun season, one that it's going to be hard to establish the narrative very early, just because I don't think anybody is really going to be who they are until December. There's a lot of football to be played.
Experience makes a big difference. So for you, in your experience, how do you cover this league or the team now? Maybe in a bit different way than you did before, because experience told you what was important and what wasn't.
I think experience should tell me anti-experience has value now. What I mean by that is the league has done things this way for however long. We're used to these patterns. I don't think there's any aspect of the game or the media that's covering it that's the same as it was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that seems like a simple statement, but the NFL, probably more than any other sport, does more to change everything that it's doing. And with that, the challenge of covering it becomes different. The pliability of different media in which, you know, they're covering the game, that changes how you're looking at things. I just had a talk with my people yesterday that roster cutdown day is a tentpole event, is what we call it.
Right.
This is a big marker on the schedule as far as our work goes. There's a lot to do here. And, you know, some people said, well, what's the big deal? They announce the cuts and they move on. No. There are several things that are going to happen. And you saw it. There's going to be a couple trades before cuts. Guys are going to get cut, and that's when the gamesmanship begins, because they can cut to 52 and wait to pick up a guy if this guy's going to come available. Who's cutting early? Who's cutting late? You get into waiver claims, which I don't know if you happen to see that, but Carolina claimed like half the players that got cut in the league. That's an interesting situation to go over that might not have been the same previously. And then you have practice squad. You know, practice squad used to be kind of for the uber dorks, you know, the ones who really get into the game. They love to see who's going to make the practice squad or who else you could get that got cut somewhere else. The practice squad now is much more weaponized to a team for a couple reasons. One, they can call, you can have multiple veterans on it. You didn't used to be able to do that. Now you can use them as a way to not circumvent the cap, but you don't have to pay them very much while they're practicing for you, and they could be called up leading into a game. Now that guarantees them a minimum salary for 3 weeks, but they can save that money. And here's the big thing. This rule didn't used to be as big a deal as it is now. Players who are on a team's active roster for week one, they have their salary for the year guaranteed. Practice squad's not the active roster. So teams that are signing people today are signing to their practice squad. So with that, you have a lot of machinations, a lot of different things that you can do. What player is going to get a better chance to get promoted to the active roster come week two? That's probably what they're making their decision on. All of these things play into how you cover it, I guess, is really what I'm saying here. It's not the way that it used to be. So knowing each year things are going to become more important, having to stay ahead of both from a league perspective as well as media perspective, staying ahead of where the news is going and how to tell those stories is critically important. I really feel like that's changed year to year at a much more rapid pace in the last 5 years than it did the previous 15, which is about where I am now with, right. with my level of experience. Things were pretty static. Mm-hmm. Now they change pretty consistently, and you have to be on top of the transactional stuff and how it plays across a more global league. And it's right. because of the rule changes they put into place, mostly in the post-COVID environment.
Right. My good friend, thank you so much. Appreciate it. I'm glad you came on a little bit later with us. And as always, you're the best.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Indeed. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We continue with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.